on. But he's been reading all this information, trying to get some knowledge so that he can figure out what's going on with a certain experiment he's running. He calls it a Coleman experiment. And, yeah, there's a lot of interesting data. And whether it's going to work out for him or not doesn't matter. It's the adventure. I agree with it.
Yeah, it's funny you say, because that's sort of exactly what I was thinking before when I first was starting to listen to you guys. Was, you know, it doesn't really matter whether this does or does not work out for him. Well, I think it may matter to him. But it makes you, as an individual that's sort of curious as to what's going on, it made me open up books and, you know, try to find some of the stuff you guys were talking about, which is always kind of fun.
Yes, and like all knowledge, you know, knowledge breeds knowledge. And when you start to read about, and I don't care what the subject is, even like history of the world, and you want to start with the Greeks and then go to the Western expansion and all of that, it's just so interesting and takes so much of your time, but it's a pleasure. And I don't care what you like better, whether it's music, history, or what, there's always an adventure there for anybody who's interested.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Anybody who's interested, you hear a little bit of it on the radio, and you think, gee, that's kind of interesting. Let me go look some of that up. And, you know, you learn, well, you know, simple things. Like when Dick was talking about ground plane antenna versus a 5/8 versus placement on a car roof, when I asked that question before. I mean, yes, a 5/8 has certain gain characteristics that the ground plane doesn't, but the fact that, you know, you can put the ground plane in the center of the car roof and it makes it apparently more desirable. So that's obviously what I'm going to end up doing. I mean, there's just so many guys that had experiences and put it there that you're like, okay, I might not know how to do the math to think that this is the best place, but I'm pretty sure I can trust the experience of these guys that have been doing this for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years.
Well, I know I'm still learning, and I learn a lot from Dick, and all of his comments, I trust them, and they're very valuable to me. I spent almost a year investigating a permanent magnet because, you know, everybody, oh, yeah, magnet, yeah, and everybody knows how it works. Well, you don't. It's not as easy as it sounds, but I found out enough information to satisfy my requirements, and I loved every minute of it. A lot of experiments, mostly failures, but a few successes brought me to the right direction. But people have to be willing to spend the time and the energy to pursue that. You can't learn by osmosis, really. So, you know, maybe somebody else wants to play golf. I have no problem with that. But I have a lot of fun in the science world.
You mean that's why I'm not learning when I put the book under my pillow?
Well, maybe if you turn the pages before you put it under the book each night, maybe you could get a little bit. But I don't know.
But I mean, I go chapter by chapter. I just don't know why I'm not picking it up that way.
Well, you could try eating it. Maybe that would work. But it seems most people read them, unfortunately, right?
John, I got enough trouble eating my own words before I eat somebody else's.
Well, every time I read a book about somebody who's supposedly an expert, it's like everything else you learn, it requires you to start asking questions. And then you have to find somebody who can answer them. Whether you agree with it or not is a different story. So that's why it's an adventure. And I think the learning curve, it's like exponential. It just explodes as you keep going, and it's tough to keep track of it all.
Yeah, but it's fun. You know, you really can't keep track of it all, but maybe you can, you know, keep track of enough that you can do whatever project it is that you want to do.
Yeah, Wesley and I were talking a little earlier about that, that I have an awful lot of equipment in my lab, and sometimes I don't use a piece for maybe a year, year and a half, and when I take it down off the shelf or hook it up, and then I got to say, ooh, how does this work? Of course it comes back pretty quick, but you still have to have that little refresher, but it keeps the world interesting.
You know, it's funny you say that because I've experienced that, you know, with the airplane. As aircraft become more sophisticated, let me drop it for a second. Sorry, I had to just pick something up. As airplanes become more sophisticated, returned to work after having not flown for about 6 or 7 months. I actually sat down in the seat and looked at essentially the computer, one of the major computers in the aircraft. It's called an FMS. And the FMS has a control head, which is the interface called the Do. And so anyway, I'm sitting here staring at this thing, whatever you want to call it, and I couldn't remember how to program it for a second. I looked at it, and it was just drawing a blank, and then all of a sudden, I found that first page in my head. Oh yeah, this is how you start. The moment I started, everything else just followed. But there's that period of time when you just stare at the input device and go, how do I do this again? And one whitey white.
Yeah, that's when that PC2WGB, that's when that muscle memory or so-called kicks in, and you get right back in the saddle. I often wondered, maybe with pilots that have an enormous amount of experience, like yourself, you may not have a problem, but I often wondered, if all of the electronics failed, and all you had was the gimbal, and you could keep your eye on the ball, do you think you could land a plane the old way by the seat of your pants?
Actually, that's what comes back to basics, at least it should. There's been a number of studies that have been done, and if your basic skills come back quickly, everything else should come back with it over time. It's when you lose the basics that you might not remember or be capable of remembering how to do all the peripheral things in terms of programming and stuff like that, because your mind isn't in the right groove. You've got to know what you want to do, or you want the airplane to do, I guess is a better way to put it. You've got to know what you want the airplane to do before you can get the computer to do the right thing for you.
Yes, and I would imagine that the feel of the plane, if you have a lot of experience in that airframe, the feel, the seat of the pants, actual response to the controls, you could probably do well with that if you have the experience. Basically, no matter what happens, as long as you don't have a mechanical failure, but you could probably lose all the instrumentation and still make it down, my belief.
And it worked. It depends on the aircraft. If you lost every single electronic thing, because they're all separate sources of power, they're all separate activities that they're doing. So if you actually had failure of every electronic thing, you'd be in trouble. There's just no way to get around a complete and total electrical failure in an Airbus. Now, in an MD-80, not a problem. But in the modern airplane, the Airbus, it is a problem. But if you just lost one of the big primary computers, or maybe you lost all three of the primary computers, you'd be able to fly the aircraft. Most guys can do it. It's a 60-40 split whether you can or cannot. But most guys can do it.
Well, that's a relieving thought. I would imagine that just the feel of the aircraft, as long as, everything is fly-by-wire, it seems, so I imagine that's why they have those generators on the engines where they split the power up, from what I understand, to prevent something like that from happening. But I often thought of it. I'm sure it has happened at one time, but I'm not privy to any episode.
Well, again, it's a function of what are the statistics. What are the chances of this thing happening when you've got all failure of certain computers all at the same time? And the classic example is that guy Scully that landed in the Hudson. I dropped the mic. That guy Scully who landed in the Hudson, the only reason he was in the Hudson instead of back at the airport is that the manufacturer made a decision that it was unlikely for a pilot to lose both engines at the same time. Therefore, they built the computer that runs each engine. And each engine went back to idle on the guy. The engines didn't actually quit when he went through that flock of birds, but they rotated back to idle and they did that because each one assumed that it was the only one out there, and the chances of the other one failing at the same time was just it wasn't going to happen.
Okay. Was it possible for him to turn those engines up again? Or I would imagine he tried that, or maybe he didn't have time.
He didn't have the ability to. Each engine, in the old days, you had a fuel control unit, the initials of FCU. And the FCU was a mechanical device that literally, by a comparison of static pressure in front of the aircraft, dynamic pressure in the engine inlet, the position of the power lever, which was basically a demand, an indication of demand, and the amount of RPM that the engine was producing. Finally, something called a speeder spring, which compared the input pressure in the engine cowl to the exhaust pressure. Let me see if I have accounted for everything. We had PT1, which was the total pressure in the front of the engine. You had PT2, which is the pressure in the cowl of the engine. You had TT1, which was the temperature in the cowl. I forgot to input the temperature indication. So then you have TT1, which is also in the cowl of the engine. And then you've got TT2, which is the pressure in the back, or the temperature in the back of the engine, total temperature in the back of the engine. And you're comparing all these things, plus the power, the lever angle, which is basically like the throttle position, if you will. And it determined how much fuel was being metered into the engine by comparing all these things. Let me drop it. And so anyway, it does all this comparison mechanically and schedules the amount of fuel that the engine By comparing all these things. The new device is called a FADEC, which is fully automated digital digital electronic control. And in a FADEC, it should save, because it's electronic and it knows a much more precise mapping algorithm, it should save about 7% fuel burn on any given flight. But with a FADEC, the assumption is that it is not likely that both engines will fail at the same time. Therefore, each engine has its own computer which decides when to bring the engine back to idle, because the assumption was if it hit something, it ingested it on one side and one side only, so the engine therefore cycled itself back to idle for us, so that when I got back to the airport, the mechanic could go out and inspect the engine and replace what was necessary. Now, if they've been flying an old airplane, something pre-electronic, something, made as late as the 1980s, I should say not made, designed, like if they've been flying a 757 or a 767, 777, if they'd been flying one of those things, the pilot would have looked at the indication when the power lever started to come back, because they still have auto throttle. When it started to come back, the pilot would have said, the heck with this, and pushed the lever back up, and he just had control. You don't have that control in the engine that's mounted on the Airbus, because, again, Airbus is from the computer, knows more than you do. And as a result, the guy had to land in the river. If he'd been flying an MD-80, if he'd been flying any of those other aircraft that I described to you, he'd have landed back at the airport. He'd have thrown the...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
How much talking did I do or miss?
Just the very end, you were talking about if he had a later aircraft, he would have been able to make a decision to repower and get back to the airport. I got him to that point.
It was actually the earlier aircraft, not the later. If he'd had the earlier aircraft, he'd have done that.
Okay. I thought when he took that strike that the primary compressive fans may have fallen apart or something like that. I didn't realize. I thought the engines were destroyed. So, that's news.
That is the news, and they don't want you to know that because the FAA made an active decision not to publicize that because they didn't want the flying public to be concerned when they got on the aircraft.
Sounds like they should put another lever back on that console. I feel better about it, that's for sure. But he also had an awful lot of experience, from what I understand. I believe he also may have flown Air Force One or something like that. So he had a lot of time.
Not sure whether he flew Air Force One. I know he had, you know, military or VIP flight experience. But I do know that the guy had a tremendous amount of glider experience. So, you know, he was the right pilot for this thing to happen to.
I thought those things had such a bad glide ratio that they were like falling rocks.
It was, but it was a controllable falling rock because the guy was able to, you know, keep the thing right side up and pointed where he wanted it.
Yeah, that's where the talent was. And no panic. He was just answering that controller in just a matter-of-fact way, going into the Hudson. And the guy's like, what? The other one said, I think he said he's going into the Hudson. I found that comical.
It was comical, but you hit the nail on the head. He was very matter-of-fact about it. He's like, this is what I'm doing.
Yep, and as I told you, and you know that I always watch those air disaster things they have on TV, and most of the time, the communications on the recorders when they play them back, those guys stay pretty calm in tough situations. That's amazing.
We don't have a choice. You know, you're very busy, and you communicate. We have a little thing. First you aviate, then you communicate. In other words, your first thing you do is you fly a plane. The second thing you do is you tell somebody what you're doing.
Yep, I could understand that. If you have time, you can explain it. Otherwise, you're too busy. And some of those guys in the situations that turned out okay were extremely busy. You know, I just find it amazing, like that the one they always show, the Hawaiian one where the top blew off, and I think one stewardess lost her life, but those guys maintained communications and kept that plane. They didn't lose their cool. That's amazing.
They did really well. They did, like you said, they lost a flight attendant. She just, you know, she was standing in the galley, and when the top came off, she went with it. But other than that, you know, they lost literally one person. Of course, you feel very sorry for the girl and or the person. And the fact is, she was an older woman, and so, you know, if she had retired at age 65, she would have been home. But she was, you know, she was well past retirement age, but she continued to want to fly, and there was no medical reason for her not to, so, she, you know, she was.
Wow, Hank, I didn't realize that she was elderly, over, you know, 65. Well, back in the day, that would have never happened because they were farmed out or put on desk duty or something, but wow, that's another interesting point. Yep, I always watch those, and I always look at the pilots when they come in and they're interviewed and all. I just think that they just carry on so professionally. I just find that fascinating.
Well, I like to believe that we're professional. I like to believe that, you know, we are capable of doing our jobs without panic and without discipline problems. Because if you're not disciplined in your own thoughts, you're not going to be able to perform the job well when you need to.
Yep, because they're aware of the criticality, without a doubt. And that safety issue goes along with a lot of occupations that are dangerous. You have to have people who can, you know, it can always happen. You don't think it's going to happen, but when it does, you've got to have that routine down. And that's true with all those dangerous occupations.
It's not that you don't think that it's going to happen. It's that you're prepared for it, hopefully, when it does happen.
Yep, I have a few friends that were in submarines, and they had issues that would happen, and, you know, flooding, pipes breaking, some of the craziest things that happen on submarines. And again, because they're trained to really a finely honed edge, they just handle it like, hey, that's part of business. Fascinating stuff.
I wish I'd discovered submarines before I discovered airplanes. I probably would have been more interested in that. Become one of those things that, you know, I keep buying the good books when they come out. I don't bother with the, you know, every book. I certainly don't read the trashy ones. But when, you know, you get a book, I don't know if you've heard of a book called Blind Man's Bluff by a gal named Susan Sontag. I mean, it was just a wonderful experience to read that book, be able to read that book. You know, she's technically correct in what she did. You know, I have a friend whose father was a submarine skipper, and he recommended that discovered just how interesting I thought submarines were, I was too old to get in and go do it.
Yeah, I had a great time when I went up to Electra Boat, and I was able to go into a few of the craft and see what was going on up there. And I was working with another engineer on some project, and we were showing a lot of nice stuff. I don't know if I'd want to do it. I'd like to take a trip in one, but to go out on a six-month stint or something like that, I don't know about that. That takes a special person, and those guys are appreciated for sure, especially when you look at some of the weapons that they carry on there. There's an awful lot of weaponry on a sub. People don't realize that.
Not only is there a lot of weaponry, it takes a special kind of guy to do that six-month tour, as you were alluding to earlier, talking about earlier. The thing I think is fascinating is I read a story, and I think it was probably in Blind Man's Bluff, but I don't really remember which book it was in. But you know, the Navy has what they call blue and gold crews for each submarine. So, you know, a crew goes out, they spend their 6 months in a boomer anyway, they spend their 6 months patrolling the air patrol area, and then they come back, the submarine is refitted. Cleaned up, and you know, repairs are made, things are serviced, and with a different crew, it goes back out for another 6 months. So you get essentially 7 months off in a row, because it takes a month to set the submarine up for its next evolution. And with these 7 months that you get off, you have plenty of time to go do other things. Well, there's a classic story of these two guys that were comparing in that 1 month off time period where they overlapped, and one crew was just, you know, getting ready to turn the submarine over to another crew. These two guys were talking, and one guy showed another guy a picture of his wife, and it turned out they were both married to the same woman. And she, you know, deliberately did it, obviously, and she was assuming that they would never understand that they, you know, that they would never catch her because, you know, she was with one guy for 6 months, and then the next guy for 6 months, and one white light.
KC2WGB, interesting concept. Yeah, I can see that going on. Well, you know, I understand, like, some of the carrier details, they'll go out with the assets on board, and they'll spend maybe 6-7 months out at sea, and then they return. And, of course, the assets are transferred to another craft, and that's the life they live. So they're out there for the same time, but I think that's less stressful than it would be in a submarine. I think it takes a little more, I don't know if it's courage, but you got to have peace of mind, I would assume. Carrier is different.
I think the word peace of mind is, you know, hitting the nail on the head again, because you don't get a lot of sunlight exposure. And they've actually determined that one of the things that determines how well somebody does under high stress environments, literally, there's sunlight exposure. These guys don't get it because they're obviously in the submarine. So it's in the carrier, you can at least see the outside world at some point. So you can get some sunshine and all the rest of it. You don't need a lot, but you need some on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and I understand. Occasionally, the submarines, you can go on deck and in tours and things like that to get a little bit of sunlight. But, you know, when they're making those trips under the ice cap and things like that, there's a lot of things that your mind can play games. And I guess they're all tested for that, as I imagine as they should be. But you look at some of the instrumentation they have to be using, even more than like the CIC room on a carrier, they have a lot of instrumentation. And that's all they have to know what's going on around them. Where on a carrier, you got somebody up on a bridge, you can pick up a phone and say, hey, what's going on up there? You can't do that with a sub.
Yep, that's true. I'm going to change the subject for a second, if you don't mind, and ask you if you know anything about smoke detectors that make chirping sounds when you operate 2-meter radios.
I've heard of that happening. What the issue is, I don't know. But it seems to be on the battery-operated ones do that more than the ones that are hooked up to the AC lines, the newer ones.
Oh, and release the mic, it's going to chirp again. And that's kind of interesting. I would understand it a little more readily if it chirped when I started transmitting, but it does so when I'm stopping.
Okay, when you release the mic, it makes it chirp, so it's getting the collapse pulse from the RF. You know what you made, Trudy? Now, you didn't have this before you changed the battery, I'm going to assume. It happened after you changed the battery. You want to make sure that those battery wires are still twisted in a twisted pair fashion.
Good point. I did not do that when I did all the changes. I did 8 of them in the house, and I don't think I did, you know, with a cognizant of maintaining the twist in the wires.
Yeah, that's a possibility I think could happen if the wires weren't replaced in the same fashion they were when you unplugged the battery. Are more than one detector, is it doing it more than one detector?
But the devices are rigged in such a way that if one does anything, the other one, you know, circuit does the same thing.
Wow, so you're not even sure of which one's causing the problem. It may be one, and I would assume the easiest thing to do is one at a time unplug the batteries until you find the one that's causing the problem.
Yeah, I would like to know, but like I said, I haven't figured it out, but I'm sure it's one of these things.
Also, there's another thing you could try, like a metal cover for a pot, sort of a Faraday cage. Put it over the detector and see if it still does it. You know, before you start taking them apart and playing with it, you might be able to put a shield on it, or at least enough to attenuate it so it doesn't do it. You may find the offending one that way.
Sounds like a method of tin foil or that, or aluminum foil.
That's all right. I call it tin foil, too. Oh, it's apt. I'll get around to it. I know it's aluminum now. Oh, amazing stuff. Well, yeah, I've heard a few people claiming that on the battery ones, but I've never investigated to see. But when you do, let me know what it winds up being.
Okay, just was hoping you had some input so I could, you know, avoid some of the tedious work of tracking this down. But I'll give it a shot and let you guys know if I find anything or what I found.
NY2H.
Lou, what are you doing up this late? You're retired.
Good evening, gentlemen. Hello, Hank. I've heard you a few times. I don't think we've spoken before. My name is Lou, NY2H. John, yeah, I had the machine on. I was doing some testing. But you're right. I'm going to bed. But I'll leave it on. Leave it on for you guys. So, carry on. Catch down the log, NY2H.
Lou, if you got a second, I got a recommendation for you, maybe if you have time.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know that Dick requested the machine be turned off on Sunday at 12 to end the net, but is it possible to have it maybe reinitiate, say, at like 12:30 so we don't lose it for the whole Sunday evening?
Yeah, anything's possible, John. I'll bring it up at the board meeting if you want, see what they say.
Yeah, because Dick has notified everybody, you know, it was his choice, and that he wants to end it at 12 o'clock, and he has things to do, which I don't blame him. But it would be nice if, you know, give it a break for a half hour or 15 minutes, whatever they choose to do. Just broach the question if you get a chance, and I thank you for that.
Absolutely. Okie doke. All right. Take care. And, I've been up, I've been listening a lot, not chiming in. I've been doing all this testing and stuff. It's amazing because I choose the wee hours, and during the week, I guess, you know, Todd is on and a bunch of people are on late hours. So I figured tonight, you know, the machine's off, I'll just turn it on, do a little quick testing, and come out of the woodwork. Man, people are listening to this thing. So anyway, enjoy. Catch you guys later. NY2H.
Okay, Lou, have fun. KC2WGB.
Lou, here's N1YDY. Pleasure talking to you, sir, and have a good night.
Alrighty, Hank. We'll catch you down the log one of these days. You take care. Good night.
Good night, sir. All right, John. Where were we?
I don't know. What do you got planned for the winter? What are you going to be doing over the indoor season?
You know what? I'm really not sure. It kind of depends on my wife does. Now that my dad's passed on, I need to see my son. I haven't seen him in a while, depending upon how cooperative she is. We'll determine what I'm doing. If she's going to be cooperative, I'm going to be spending time in Michigan to be with him. And if she's not, then I'll have to figure out what I'm going to do here.
Well, you have the opportunity now to travel, so maybe you could combine it and do a little traveling, get to see your son, which I understand. But Michigan in the winter, I don't think so. Not for me, anyway.
I understand, but you know, I've got a 5-year-old, and I miss him terribly. It's one of the things going on in my life. His mother and I don't get along, he's playing games. And I've got to figure out what I'm going to do.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's an unfortunate situation. Anytime they use children as leverage, it just becomes so unfortunate. It's very difficult to deal with. Yeah, I wish you luck with that.
Yep, kind of miserable. I think I hear my mother walking around downstairs, which means that the fire smoke detectors are waking her up. I think I'm going to say 7-3 here. Thanks very much for the conversation. And one YDY.
Oh, and I thank you also. Always interested. Okay, Hank, yeah, that could be disturbing. So I wish you luck with it. Smoke detectors, and if you do find out, don't forget to let me know. KC2WGB.
N1YY, thank you.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Lou. What's up, sir?
She noticed the flickering is gone now.
Well, I haven't been able to access the new address you gave me. I tried it both on Google and on my other browser, and I can't get that address. A zillion things come up about Limehart, but nothing about this particular feature. And I entered it many times to make sure I was doing it right, so I must be doing something wrong.
So here's the deal. Number one, you're putting it in the search window rather than the address window. But all you have to do on the old one, if you can still get to the old one, is just click on the new address. And it should take you right over, or just wait, I think, like 30 or 60 seconds I had it set for. And it would automatically take you over. Can you get to the old address with the truck on it now?
It says, change your records, don't come here anymore.
All right, so if you just hang out in 60 seconds, it'll take you to the other one. Or you can click on one of those links, and it'll take you to the other one, beginning with test.
Yes, I have one that's HTTP, and then all that nonsense and test W2BL. Okay, I'm going to click on that one and see what happens. Came up immediately. Beautiful.
Yeah, that's because we're giving the other guy back his. He's got that address reserved for something else. So that's why we did that. But yeah, it's nice and smooth now. Right now, I'm desensing it. So as soon as I let up and you come on, it'll go back.
Okay, yep, it went right after you dropped. I do have one suggestion, which seems a better situation from my point of view, is that little flashing icon you have in the upper left. You had it one night where it was flashing about every second, which gave you an immediate sense that you were in touch and that it was working. Now you have to wait for that rate, for that 10 seconds. I don't know, you know, if that's a big deal to change, but that might be a benefit.
Well, the browser is only looking about every 3 seconds, so it would never be more than that. But if that was happening, either there was a situation. You know, I get into a lot of these strange, weird modes as I'm developing this thing. So, you know, you watch it, you might see some strange stuff, but I'll probably leave it the way it is. Anyway, the configuration now is the other two are actually live sites located where they say they are. But they have the little antennas on them, so you got to work them. We know the one works, the one on the right, because there's somebody close by there, and when he's on the air, it times red. So those two are on the input. The W2PL one is on the output, and I'm listening it over here, so it's actually as I receive it. So during the TechNet tonight, the power of the repeater actually was going down a little bit. I panicked. I said, oh, thing's not working. Then I looked at the S meter on the radio. So I don't know if that was propagation or the amplifier or what. I've seen that phenomenon a couple of times. But right now, like I say, I do sense it when I transmit. Because it's right there. It's right next to the radio.
Yep, and it seems to be working beautifully. Very nice. I like this idea. As you go and get more of these things hooked up and running, we're going to be able to get a lot of revelations from this, I believe.
I'm sorry, a lot of what?
Like epiphanies.
Epiphanies? All right. Oh, revelations. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, the yellow ones, they're on order. These are guys that have actually donated to the club for one. So we have five pending, so those will be the next sites populated.
Okay. Well, eventually, I do want to get one, and I'm willing to send the check in. The only thing I need is somebody to make it, like, plug and play for me, so I don't have to do too much, because I'm limited, as you know.
NY2H. Well, that's absolutely the way it is. It's plug and play. Basically, if you have a spare port on your router, that's all you need. And some kind of antenna, but you're so high up there, you probably can put something in the window. I don't know. So that's another thing we're going to develop. I think Bernie's going to take one of those two sites that are active now. They're both under his control, so he's going to put a roof antenna on one of them. That should make a difference. And, really not much you have to do. I can program them remotely, change the frequencies, set the gain, change the detection algorithm, a little algorithm in there that kind of tries to figure out, you know, whether it's an off-frequency signal or just splatter or noise. So anyway, just happy that it's all of these hurdles are surmountable. Yeah, so it's getting better and better.
I wonder if you're keeping a log of how many hours you're working on the system. That would be nice to see at the end when it's fully operational. And I think you're right. Your first impression was the smallest antenna you need just to get a signal, because I don't want to have it where no matter who comes on, I'm going to get a reading. So maybe an antenna, like you said, maybe something just put in the window, or maybe mounted outside, but not up high, because I'm interested in picking up the signal that may be like a Brooklyn signal or Manhattan, rather than somebody way out on the East End.
I feel like going, I think it's pretty easy to mitigate a signal that's too strong. As I say, we can bring the gain down on these things. I think our challenge is going to be going the other way, get real ears on them. I did a little experimentation on mine, and I had the indoor antenna in my basement, the one that came with it, less than a foot long, and virtually I can go down a block, and that was about it. Then I put them on a roof antenna, but it was it's an untuned antenna. And I got like over a mile from the car. I don't know. And now, so this is an area we have to, maybe I want to get Andy involved, CDL, do some field testing and such. But we'll see. We'll see how it develops. Bernie's got some ideas in terms of placing these things.
Lou, that's a great thought you just had, because if you think about it, once the antenna links are established and mounted, think about this. If we have a vehicle that has a specific wattage output and it's sent to different areas and you transmit and you get an idea of what receivers are hearing what signal, that may be a good gauge to set everything by.
Yeah, absolutely. what's fun is I go out with my phone, I look at the thing on my phone, I key up, and I see what effect it might have. So, I don't know, we have a Walmart about a mile, a little over a mile away. I was in the parking lot there, and sure enough, I'm looking at my phone, keying up, you know, on the output. And it heard me, so... So there's one in Garden City, and then Matt, I guess, isn't too far from there. When Matt's on the F in his house, he lights that one up. And, you know, it's immune to the output, so it's selective enough, too. That's the thing. It's a big balance. I see the Garden City. Oh, everybody just went down with him. Oh, it's 3 o'clock, 3 a.m. I do one reset a day on the service, and that's 3 a.m. No kidding. Wow, it's getting late. Yeah. It's automatic. Every 3 a.m. I kill a server, and it'll start up by itself now in about a minute or two, and everybody will reconnect.
Well, I'm happy you gave me this information, because now I can go back to watching it as it progresses. And I know you want to go to bed, so I just have one more question. Have you been keeping Dick up to speed on this system?
You know, he's on the mailing list. There's a small mailing list. You're on it, too. And I've not heard anything from him, so I don't know if he's reading the emails or what, or if he's aware of it. No clue.
Okay, next time I talk to him, I'm going to ask him if he's visited the site and has an idea of what's going on. Okay, very good. I'll let you get some sleep. Pleasure as usual. And I'll talk to you on Dynaloxer.
Alrighty. Very good. And, yeah, let me know if you do send Jerry a check or something. Let me know, and, you know, the big weight is on the dongles because they come from China. You know, it's like a lead time, like a month. So I'm waiting for, oh, I think 5 and another 5. So, you know, but as soon as you're on board, we'll either see what we have coming, or if not, we'll, you know, order more. Because we're putting, you know, and people that are doing it that way, we're putting them online first, basically. So. All right, good night, John. Catch you maybe tomorrow. UCWGB, NY2H, 73.
Okay, Lou, I'm going to mail out Jerry a check this week. I'll mail out a check for $100, and I believe he said that would cover everything. And I don't have to be, you know, next in line or anything like that. When you get around to it, just send it out, and I thank you.
All right, if you want... because I also have to keep track of inventory and everything. Either you can email him with that information or not. You know, it goes to the... We have a post office address. It's on the Limark website. You make it out to Limark, and he should give you a some kind of letter that, you know, you donated. They don't get put a dollar amount on it, but it's basically saying that, you know, you made a donation, so you could... tax deduction purposes. But yeah, I got to be in the loop, so if you want, I can give him the information, or if you give him the information, just CC me on it, so I can update my records, and, you know, we're keeping a track of our budget from the main budget of the club, so that we know we can, you know, we're dealing with and what we can, what resources we have, what we can buy.
Very good. That sounds reasonable. Yeah, next time I catch Jerry on the air, I'll let him know that it's being forwarded to him. I'll market attention to Jerry, and I'll mail it to the Limark address that's on the webpage. So that's how I usually do my yearly fee anyway, so I know it always gets through. Sounds good.
All right, well, if you don't mind, then I will send him an email, because I just got to update my records here, so why don't I do that, and I'll CC you on it. That'll be good.
Okay, you do that, and I'll take care of it this week, and he should have it before the end of the week, I'm sure. TC. Stuttering Spanish. All right. Enjoy the day. And enjoy your retirement, sir. Well deserved.
Thank you, John. Yeah, it's fun. And I'll probably be joining you on some of these late night QSOs, but I'm just so deep into this now, but it's good. It's a lot of fun, and it's enjoyable. So. All right. I'm going to send that email out now. Take care. NY2H.
All right, Loop 7-3, and enjoy KC2WGB. We'll be clear.
National Safety Council, so You know, there are lots of different organizations that offer the program that are all part of the National Safety Council. Well, 3 years ago when I took it, I went to National Safety Council and I took their defensive driving program online, and I was required to make a phone call for a voice print, and they would give me a password every once in a while to be allowed to proceed.
Boy, you'd think that you were trying to work on a NORAD missile base or something.
They got rid of that, thankfully.
Yeah, I guess, you know, all of those Arabic taxi cab drivers were getting their friends to take the classes for them.
Well, it didn't prove anything. I could have had you log on as me at the initial voice print and have you take the whole class for me anyway.
What if they then also had my voice print and found me doing it again?
You mean three years later or tomorrow for someone else? I don't know.
Yeah, that's why that kind of stuff kind of gets a little bothersome. Plus, the fact is, now they have your voice print on file on some database someplace that could be used for purposes other than just identifying you for a silly little defensive driving class.
Yeah, well, I can go online and do my wipes now, and they won't know it if I really wanted to. But I don't feel like sitting through that again, because you still have to hit the next button timed when they say it's okay to hit the next button.
Yeah, it's just like the OSHA classes and some of the other ones that I've taken online. Yeah, because that way they're assured that you sat there for the minimum amount of time required to take the class. And the timer doesn't release the next button until the proper amount of time per page has been displayed.
Yeah, and the final recap exam, you got to get 20 out of 25 questions right. It was so hard, I only made 25 out of 25.
You could always do the other thing that some people have done on some of these harder type exams, is sit there with your digital camera and just take pictures of the screens, so that when you go to take the test, all you do is refer back to the pictures.
Well, I've done it differently on exams that I did, that I've taken. I opened up either two windows and or opened up on a second computer the lesson, and I would just look it up, which I don't think they really care. As long as you can give them the right answer, you're looking it up, you're learning.
Yeah, they've gotten smarter on a lot of this stuff. They don't allow simultaneous logins.
I remember one series that I used to take years ago for CE credits. It was put out, I think, by... You would read an article, and then to prove that you read the article, you had to take an exam on it. Well, if you got the question wrong, it referred you back to the right place in the article where the answer was, and then you got to take the question again.
So you could just take the questions without reading the article, just by letting it refer you back to the article.
That's right.
And to PPN Mobile. You know the Meadowbrook is closed, but it's closed south of you.
I'm on the four-laner already.
Are you under the big million-dollar sign?
The one that says delays on 495 West, exit 31 to 19. I'm just about going underneath it right now.
I'm ahead of you by, I don't know, less than a quarter of a mile, because I just passed the travel time network sign.
Okay, so it's your responsibility to make sure there are no thumbtacks on the road.
Or to place them, depending upon my mood.
Okay, if you say so. Please don't, at least not in the lane of...
What lane are you driving in? I've got... It's over the button that dispenses the thumbtacks.
Well, I'm not in the four-laner anymore. I just entered the split. So you only have three lanes to guess.
Let's see. Knowing you, you're probably in the middle lane.
That's for me to know and you to guess. What is this slowdown caused by? Do you know? Is it just volume?
I don't know. It's just a slowdown. Slowdown.
Oh, well. Well, this is the only early morning time I'm going to have to do this week because I'm not working Thursday or Friday.
Me as well. Me as well.
Don't you go in early tomorrow and Wednesday?
Yeah, I go in early tomorrow Wednesday, but I me as well for Thursday and Friday.
Oh, that's what you can do, Teddy P here.
And here.
Yeah,
that's what I meant. No, tomorrow and Wednesday will be normal days. In and out, maybe a little... I don't know. Maybe a little overtime. I did a double on Friday, so... I also worked overtime on my regular shifts on Friday, so that pretty much still covers me for Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, well, I get the straight pay. They just let me take it off. And, whatever.
Yeah, well, when people are salaried, that's usually the way things go, you know. You get sick days, holidays, paid vacation days, this, that, the other thing, you know. We don't get those kind of things.
Yeah, well, we also have to put in extra hours without pay.
Well, what can I say? It is what it is. My hours are compensated for, so at least, you know, for not having the other stuff, that's my other
stuff. Talking about compensation, I hope the hospital straightens things out with your mother. And he got his first check that he was supposed to be making paramedics. They still had him listed at the EMT pay. And, that check, that he got at the wrong rate. Eventually fix it, but all that's going to get lumped into one check, so he's going to lose extra taxes.
You know what's funny? On simplex and reverse, nothing bothers you. Well, they'll eventually catch up to him, and listen, if he gets banged a little extra hard on the taxes, you know, he gets smacked that way. It is what it is. It's near the end of